magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It's Wednesday, August 15th, 2018. How's that day of yours going, Jason? Pastor Jason?
It's early still. You don't have any announcements? Usually have a few announcements.
You know, I was telling you beforehand, I'm not quite ready to talk about the book I'm reading by Dr. Erwin Lutzer. It's something, I don't know, I got maybe 5 or 10 years ago. Holly and I have been going through all of our books and transitioning books from here to there and dusting them off. And, you know, some of them are like, wow, the fact that they have to be dusted off means they've been sitting around for a while. Mm. But we're going through all the different books and we're entertaining the idea of a new pattern of reading when Esther does her schoolwork. We'll have our adult reading time, and so we're excited about that. So I've been getting into a habit of reading in the evening, and this book on the cross is just a real interesting one, or a reminder of the power, the magnitude of what God did on our behalf. But I want to read it some more. I'm only like 3 chapters into it, but just excited. But yeah, usually I have a little list or something I want to refer to if I just thought, oh, I'm sure God's doing something or revealing truth, and you're still meeting with guys. And but yeah. When's Bible Study Fellowship start up again?
I don't know. I haven't really paid attention to that. It hasn't come on the radar yet. I've been enjoying having some space, you know, not having kind of my Sunday night doing this, Monday night doing this. So I'm not really trying to figure out when it starts yet. Yeah. I'm still enjoying my space and trying to get some things done. But one of the things is I heard a talk recently, and it kind of reinvigorated me to a story and made me think about this some. And then some of what you were sharing this morning about this book you're reading kind of touches on some of that. But, you know, back in 1 Samuel chapter 17, we had this famous story, David and Goliath. I mean, we talk about David and Goliath. This is this great underdog story, right, where, you know, little boy David, he's the underdog, the you know, unlikely candidate to come up against Goliath. And we so often take this. In fact, it's become like a cultural metaphor, right, for the things that we face in life. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I'm a David facing Goliath. You know, with God's strength, I can overcome this obstacle.
Yeah, what Goliaths are in your life?
Exactly.
That you need to overcome.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, we've packaged this all that way. And the story is really interesting because it says, you know, that the Philistines came up against the Israelites. And it says here that they were gathered and encamped in the Valley of Elah and drew up a line of battle against the Philistines. So the Valley of Elah is somewhere, they say, around, I think, Tel Aviv. They call it now the Shephelah. And it's this area, it's almost like a bowl-like area. And the reason why in the story that the Israelites are on one side and the Philistines are on the other and they do not engage in battle is because the area that they were meeting in battle, being bowl-shaped, whoever was going to advance would have to advance down into the valley, and they would make themselves open to being attacked. Hmm. And so it was kind of a losing proposition who was going to go first. So what it ended up becoming was this kind of stalemate, I guess you could call it, where they were kind of on both sides, you know, like, who's going to flinch first? And so the Philistines, they take the lead, and they send out their champion, Goliath. And we learn in the text that Goliath is a giant of a man. And he comes out and he's dressed in his armor, you know, his heavy armor and his helmet, and he's got his shield and he's got a weaver's rod and he's got his sword. I mean, he's ready for battle. And you got to think that, you know, the weapons of war of the day, and the Philistines were known for their weapons of war, but the weapons of the war of the day, and then his sheer size, his strength.
He's like 9 feet or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, 9'6". His name, Goliath. I mean, you have to think, this guy would just be intimidating. And we know it. He comes out and he begins to yell to and taunt the Israelites. And it says that the Israelites are afraid. Now, they don't move because they don't have to move. It's beholden to whoever really wants to advance. But again, it's a losing position based on the geography of where they're at. But nonetheless, they send out Goliath, who is their champion. You know, Goliath taunts them, and nobody will come forward to fight Goliath. Now, Goliath is, when I listened to this talk the other day, it was really fascinating. They said in the ancient world, there were 3 kinds of things that were used in war. There was the heavy infantry. There was the horseback riders. It could be like the tanks, I guess you would call it. And then there was the artillery. Okay, so these are modern-day words, but in ancient terms, Goliath was the heavy infantry. Hmm. He was the heavy foot soldier who came out laden for battle with his sword and his spear and his helmet and his heavy breastplate. You know, those who rode on horseback, who in those times were probably fewer than we would think, they would come out, and that would be your horseback riders. You're like your tanks. And then you had the artillery, and the artillery was made up of archers, but more so slingers. Those people who would have slings. Now, most of the time when we think about a sling and we read you know, David and Goliath, we think about, you know, like a slingshot. But slingshot is not what existed in those times. In fact, when we go to Israel in 2 months, I don't know how many days it is. I'm sure you got that already. You already know that. But when we go in those, we go to a place where we'll be able to see that. And what it essentially was a number of ropes and a little square pouch. And you would put a stone in that and you would begin to spin that. And then letting loose one of the cords, that rock would take off. And it said that there was actually a really great YouTube video that showed somebody doing the sling. He's an expert in these ancient weapons. He was doing the sling, and he was able to get the sling moving at so many revolutions, let it go. And he could hit a target the size of an apple. Hmm. And when he hit it, I mean, the target that he hit absolutely exploded at the force. Hmm. And so the sling was a very dangerous weapon. I mean, predating guns and those kinds of things. It was a way that you could launch a projectile with a very destructive speed to hit a target. One of the other fascinating facts that this talk brought out was that the area here, I forget what they called it exactly, the nature of it, but by the geography of that area, the rocks there were denser than they were in other places. Mm. They had barium sulfate was what it was called. So in the Shephelah in Elam, the rocks are mainly barium sulfate, so they're denser than normal rocks. So where a normal rock would have this kind of density and weight, these rocks, the five smooth stones that David is going to pick up, those are actually denser, and therefore, as they're being spun and let loose, they hit with more force. Mm. Now, why do I say all of that? Because I think that sometimes, now this is, I don't want to upset anybody, so just listen to what I'm going to say before you think that wait, I don't like. I think that David was actually far more dangerous than we think. Now, one of the interesting things that happens in the text is Saul goes and he says, David, I need to put the armor on you. I need to put all this stuff on you. And David says, no. I don't need to wear the armor. I've never worn it. I've not proven myself to wear it. What David is saying, he's saying, I'm not heavy infantry. I'm a slinger. This is where my skill lies. In fact, David even says to Saul, he says, your servant used to keep sheep for his father, and when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went and I struck him, he's saying, with his sling. I was able to strike. So David says, I've got a history of killing lions and bears with my sling. And so I'm far more dangerous than you know. We oftentimes think that David is kind of this symbolic weakness, and Goliath is this kind of insane symbolic strength, and David comes up against Goliath. Well, I actually think David was far more dangerous.
Yeah, it's seemingly pretty secure in who he was and how he could defend the flock.
He's secure in who he was, and he's secure in who he wasn't. Don't put the armor on me, because that's not who I am. That's not what I am, and I don't need to pretend to be something that I'm not.
I think you've talked about this in the past when we've talked about David, but men will follow leaders that are like secure in their own identity. And the fact that he had those mighty men following him, he wasn't this man. I mean, you made the contrast. He played the harp. I mean, here's the contrast of a warrior, a man's man, and yet playing the harp and singing
praises.
Listen,
he's going to kill Goliath, and then afterwards he's going to go and go like, hey, I just wrote a new song. Anybody want to hear it? Yeah, what are you, the guitar? The harp. Oh, yeah, the harp. I mean, it's an interesting dichotomy, but I think it's a dichotomy that comes from somebody who is very secure in themselves. I remember a number of years ago, I saw an interview with a notable action star. Like this guy, when you see him in the movies, he's like kicking people's butts and he's like, you know, rippling muscles and he's doing all that. And they were asking him, they're like, you know, well, what do you do in your spare time? And he's like, oh, I love to paint flowers and like nature scenes. And they showed some of his paintings. You were like, wow, he's really a good painter. And then you're thinking, wait a second, this doesn't square up with what I know about this guy, because this guy, like, jumps out of airplanes without a parachute. He, you know, he kills whole armies. He rescues the damsel in distress. His muscles ripple, and he's dangerous. And yet, now I have this other picture of him, like, sitting on his balcony, you know. You know, move the orchid over so I can paint it even better. Yeah. I mean, he's painting these flowers, and you're just like, these two don't. They don't seem to make
Must
sense.
Must finish up here so I can go garden.
Yeah, you know, I'll be back to painting. You know, and so it doesn't square up, but he's secure in who he is. Right. He knows who he is, and he knows who he isn't. And David knows who he is, and David knows who he isn't. He is not made to wear the armor. He is not made to go out and face Goliath on Goliath's terms. on the terms of kind of false strength. Because that's really what ends up happening, right? Goliath is not truly as strong as he is, and neither are the Philistines, because when Goliath falls, what do the Philistines do? They run. And so, wait a second now. Sure, one boy came out and he defeated your champion, but still, your army is mightier than the army of Israel. We know that. The Philistines were well equipped. The Philistines were made for war, and yet they retreat because their strength was simply symbolic. It was a shell. And so that's one of the things I think that's so important. David knows who he is and who he is not, and Goliath is not really what Goliath appears to be. He appears to be unbeatable. He appears to be so strong. He appears to be indomitable. But in essence, he actually is killed quite easily from a small, smooth stone of sodium barium sulfate that was launched from the sling of David. Now, why do I say all of this? Because a lot of people will say, well, wait a second. I mean, you're kind of upsetting my paradigm, because I like to think of David as weak and Goliath as strong, and when I'm weak, I'm strong, and that's because of the Lord. Well, when we properly interpret the story of David, we never get to be David. You know, in the proper Christological, I mean, always, we have the benefit of the cross. I would say this, too. When we read the Bible, we have the burden of the cross, which is we have to read everything through the finished work of Christ. You can't read the Old Testament devoid of what Christ did, or else you'll miss all the moments that point towards his coming. Imagine you tried to read Isaiah 53 and not contemplate Christ at all. Isaiah 53 would seem so strange. Mm-hmm. And yet, because of what Christ did, you read that and you go, oh, the fullness of Isaiah 53. Oh my gosh. And so looking back, we always should interpret David as a type of Christ, as a Christ figure. And so all the times you've heard those messages like, you can be David, just face your Goliaths. I think that that's wrong. You are Israel. You are standing behind in a line. You are crying. You are afraid. You don't know what to do. That thing seems so scary and you're not sure what to do. And it is the strength of Christ, which looks like weakness, that walks forward and defeats Goliath. You know, when you think about the story about David and Goliath in terms of what Paul says in Corinthians, you know, when I am weak, I am strong. It's the exact picture of that teaching. That when David comes up, listen, when David walks up to Goliath, he is far more dangerous than what Goliath thinks. Hmm. See, Goliath is like, oh, you send this boy out to face me? Come on. Yeah. David is far more dangerous than anybody wants to give him credit for. David has a history of killing lions and bears when they stole one of the members of his flock. David has the confidence that comes from following the Lord. David has a confidence of knowing who the Lord is. David has a confidence of walking in step with what the Lord has called him to do. Listen, those are not all characteristics that you and I share. Those are characteristics that Jesus has. Jesus knew who the Lord was. Jesus knew who he was in the Lord. He walked in absolute confidence of the Father's plan. He resolutely set out to Jerusalem. He set his face upon the cross. He took upon himself every burden and affliction for us. Jesus was far more dangerous than anybody gave him credit for. The rulers and the chief priests and that, they thought he was a babbler. The same thing happens with the Apostle Paul. They think he's a babbler. They think he's full of nonsense. They think he's just a troublemaker, a rebel rouser. No, he is far more dangerous than you know, because he comes in the strength of God, and he comes equipped to do a job that God has called him to do. And so when David walks up to that lion and Goliath goes, you know, oh, what are you that you would come to me? You know, I don't know what he says. He says, you know, I'm going to have the animals and whatever. We're going to feast on your flesh, feast on your body. And David's like, I don't think that's the way it's going to go. And he begins to spin that sling, and he lets loose that rock, and it hits Goliath right between the eyes, right in his weakest point. Because listen, everything that pretends to be strong actually is weak, and weaker than it even knows. Hits Goliath right between the eyes. He falls down. He walks up. He picks up Goliath's own sword. Because listen, most of the things that claim to be strong get killed by themselves. I mean, I watch so many people who, their pride and arrogance, they attempt to exude a kind of strength that's false, and they end up falling on their own sword. That's what Goliath does, doesn't he? He loses his head because of his own sword. I've seen that so many times. That's why it doesn't pay to have this kind of false humility and false strength, because in the end, you're going to end up cutting your own head off. or somebody else is going to do it for you, and it'll be real easy to do. But David, being a type of Christ, he comes forward, and he is far more dangerous than we think. And that's what happens with Jesus. And so sometimes I think that, you know, how you were saying, you're reading this book and you're really getting this picture of who Christ is, and that sometimes we don't contemplate all that Jesus is. I think one of the things that we don't contemplate, and this has come to me through, I heard this little talk, and it was a very short talk, 10 minutes. I heard this talk and it really made me think. It got my wheels turning, and I've been reading the book of Revelation because I've been teaching on our Tuesday night. I've been leading the group through talking about Revelation, and we're in, I think, chapter 2. And in Revelation, Jesus comes, and he's dangerous. Jesus says, oh my gosh, there's a sword that's going to come out of my mouth. And he says, you know, woe to me that I would come to you. I'm going to take your lampstand. By the way, when he says he's going to take your lampstand, it means he's going to take your church away from you, because the lampstand would be what? The lampstand's job is to hoist the light. Who's the light? Jesus. So Jesus, I'm going to take away your ability to show the world who I am, which means I'm going to take away your church. And he's speaking to seven churches. But Jesus comes and he says, listen, he says, I could take away your lampstand. He says, I could come, I could put you out. I mean, these are dangerous words. He says, I have a double-edged sword coming out of my mouth. This is Jesus, who is absolutely dangerous. And I think that he was as dangerous in his coming, but because he came as a little baby, you know, we sing those things, Jesus, meek and mild. And we think about Jesus with the lamb on his shoulder. And Jesus certainly was the absolute embodiment of the gentleness of God and the kindness of God and the long-suffering of God and the patience of God. But I see so many times when Jesus was also an embodiment of the wrath of God and of the anger of God. And Jesus was also knowing what was in their hearts. He made a whip of cords, and he began to do that. And people post-resurrection see Jesus, and they become fearful. You know, become white like ghosts. Why? Because he's dangerous. I always say this about God to people. I say, listen, I say, God is kind. I think this is why the Narnia movies, C.S. Lewis really wanted to have the figure of God be embodied by a lion. Mm-hmm. Because there's everything about a lion that makes you think you can pet it, except the fact that it can eat you.
Yeah.
Except the fact that it can bite you. And when it bites you, it is devastating. The wrath of a lion is devastating. And yet, we can become so enamored by the fur and the mane and all of that and forget the ferociousness of a lion. And I say that because the ferociousness of God is what brought Jesus to us, the ferocious love of God, where God said, I love you more than, I love you with an everlasting love. I always tell people, if you want to understand the love of God, read the book of Hosea, where he says, you know, you've done this and you've done this and you've done this, yet I love you. Will you come back to me? Mm-hmm. And then creates opportunities to do that, and sends Hosea to go out to get Gomer, his wife, who's out prostituting herself. And he goes into these places to retrieve his wife. And listen, you have to be bold, courageous, and ferocious to go into absolutely vile places to retrieve a vile person because you love them more than their vileness.
Yeah.
And that's what God does. And so I think that Jesus is dangerous. I think that his love is dangerous. And hear me when I say that. It's a dangerous kind of love because it will upset what you think love is. It's dangerous to what we think things should be like. Just like David was dangerous to what Goliath thought things were supposed to be like. Goliath saw a boy, and his preconceived notion was, I'll get him. I've gotten guys who are bigger than that. I can take this one down. And David was more dangerous than Goliath knew. And we can walk around and go, well, I know what love is like. I know what forgiveness is like. I know what mercy is like. And I know what that is like. And then Jesus comes and he upsets what we think it is, because his love and his mercy and his forgiveness and all those things redefine what it looks like for us. That we go into the worst and most vile places to retrieve the worst and most vile people, because that's what he does. And that's who he is. And so I really think that, like you said in the beginning, you really got my wheels turning talking about that book that you're reading, is that we've really got to think about who Jesus is, who he is, and who he isn't. Yeah. Because Jesus is so secure in that. When Jesus comes, he tells us who he is, and he also tells us who he isn't. And sometimes I think we think, like Saul, we need to dress Jesus up in some armor, and we need to give him a helmet, and we need to give him a sword and a shield, so Jesus can somehow be what we think he ought to be. And Jesus says, I don't need any of that.
Yeah, or we carry that unhealthy balance. We just see him as loving and meek and mild and caring and forgiving and full of mercy and grace, which is also very true.
Sure.
but he's the reigning Lord, sovereign, mighty. He will deal justly.
He will discipline his children. Yeah. He will, but all of it is done in love to bring them back in worship. And so I think that however it is, you know, whether it's the armor because we want to, Christ is victor, or whether it is the God is love and we just clothe him in love or whatever, we upset that very delicate, I want to say, balance of who God is. Listen, like David, this is why David is such a type of Christ.
And explain what type of Christ, so somebody tuning in.
Picture of Christ, picture of Christ, where David could go out on the battlefield and he could kick somebody's butt, and then he could go back and start playing the harp and do that. And he could go and garden, and then he could go over here and he could share a word with somebody that was corrective in his kingdom. David was a very unique balance of these things that you don't think go together. And God is that same balance, because when we think about revelation, the victory of Christ, we think about all those things. We don't always think about patience and long-suffering and kindness and love and all those things. But God is this unique and beautiful balance of all those things at once working together, just like David was. And so David is this picture of what it is. That's why I always tell people, I say, you're not David. Stop trying to think you're David. You, me, all of us, we're the Israelites going, oh no, he's going to get us. And Jesus walks out looking entirely weak and steps before the thing that you know could absolutely kill him. Hmm. And he conquers it.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just conquer it. He conquers it in such a spectacular way that he saves his people.
Oh, that we would continue to draw on him and to raise him up. Yeah, it's our perspective of him. We need to have that correct balance and that correct understanding. And we gain that from reading the scriptures and knowing God's word and studying it in its entirety. So we don't just see the love of God. We also see the justice of God.
Mm-hmm.
We see the mercy. Yes, thank you, God. You're full of grace. But there is a point when he will be just, and there is a defining moment when your chances are up. I mean, you have to make a decision.
He closed the door on the ark, and he says there is a day coming where the culmination of all things, and those who do not accept him on that day will go swimming in the lake of fire, for lack of better terms. And so there is a point where the invitation stops and the judgment begins. And yet I take such solace in Revelation, I forget what chapter it is, where it says he is holding back the winds of the north and the west and the east and the south, which means he's holding back his wrath. He's intentional to hold these things back. But the book of Revelation also says that he does let loose and the winds do blow.
Yeah, that we all may draw close to him and seek mm-hmm. him out and find him. And if you need a phone number to talk with somebody, you have questions about the Christian faith or having a relationship with God, you can dial 1-888-NEED-HIM. That's 1-888-NEED-HIM. It's a free call, and these trained counselors will talk with you about having a relationship with God, why you can trust the Bible, what it means to follow Jesus, answer any questions you have, or pray with you.
Mm-hmm.
1-888-NEED-HIM. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns and Pastor Jason Schiffel with the Ministry of Great News Radio. God bless you. Have a great day and night.